The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, third and final hour. Jimmy Sangenberger joining your morning, and happy to have you along for the ride. If that made any sense, I'm joining your morning and you're along for the ride. I don't know what it is, but here we are in the third hour, 303-696-1971, our telephone number. If you'd like to join into the festivities, you can also text into the show on the 710KNUS app on your smartphone, name in town, if you wish to text in. Just an interesting conversation in the last hour with Kwame Spearman, one of two announced challengers to Tay Anderson for the Denver Public Schools at-large position. And it's going to be a fascinating race, and we'll be interested to see what happens and how it all unfolds. And there was a lot that we had discussed, but never enough time for all of the things to discuss. And we did have questions and comments that were coming in. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get to them, but I will keep in mind many of these for future conversations, because make no mistake, we will have more with these candidates. I have some ideas for things later on in the year as well. Listener text coming in. Where is all this dang tax revenue coming from marijuana that was supposed to go to the schools? You know what? That's a great question. Let me say something about that. Guess what? The school district doesn't control 1 cent of that money. It is entirely under the purview of the city, which is a separate entity from the school board, which is separately elected. School district overseen by separately elected folks. This dysfunctional seven. And you have the mayor getting to make the decision. And guess what? I'm hearing that it is not making its way to schools for the tutoring and after school programs in an equitable way or in an effective way that it should be. We're talking a lot of money for marijuana, and it isn't going the way it needs to be. And that is not the school board's fault, believe it or not. It is the fault of Mayor Michael Hancock and his administration. And it's something that Mike Johnston or Kelly Bruff, whoever is going to be the next mayor of Denver, needs to address head on. And needs to recognize we have to direct this marijuana money in the right way. So that is the answer to that question. And unfortunately, it isn't a positive one. Alexa in Littleton, it would be awesome for kids to not grow up without a constant victimhood mentality. Tay-Tay is the king of victimhood mentality. Can't wait for Tay-Tay to get defeated. Absolutely right to both of those points. Very well and succinctly said, Alexa. This is also an interesting question I didn't get to. Does this guy, that would be Kwame Spearman, support putting HEPA filters in classrooms? He alluded to COVID in the past tense, but people are still getting it. And we know now more about the long-term effects, particularly with reinfection. Kids are set for multiple exposures. Will he do anything? Here's one of the problems with that idea. There are too many schools, as it is, in Denver who don't even have air conditioning. And they literally have heat days during the early part of the school year where schools are closed because it's too hot and they don't have air conditioning. So starting from that point where you don't even have air conditioning, that's a big safety issue. And I think that probably would be a priority for folks over HEPA filters. But it's a good idea. And it's certainly a very valid thought. Eric in Stapleton texting in. What another phony, poor students. What a stupid thing. Okay. So he didn't like endorsing Kelly Bruff at the beginning. Yep, that's how Kwame Spearman began the interview, was with his endorsement of Kelly Bruff. And asking about, Eric asking about if he would get rid of the transgenderism in the classrooms. You know, the transgender issue, the issue of LGBTQ, how that is addressed in schools is certainly an important topic we didn't get to. We'll get to that down the line without a doubt. Another question that had come in, ask him for his opinion on equity-based grading, which is what Cherry Creek Schools is implementing. It's terrible, and it's true. Equity-based grading is we're not going to let you score lower than this, and setting these basic standards for grading that take out of the hands of teachers the ability to really hold students accountable in their learning. It's terrible. It's a scourge. Denver Public Schools lowered the standards about 32%, and then the last 20 years, another text coming in, people graduate from the state of Colorado as illiterate as they did in the 1920s. I'm not sure about that comparison, but certainly the data is probably comparable. Because that issue of learning literacy rates is staggeringly low. Staggeringly low. About the marijuana tax, what about the cigarette tax? I am not sure about that one. But it is very interesting to consider so many of these different questions that you have been raising in the text. If you're texting into the show, name in town, please, if you wish to text in. So I played some of these clips yesterday when I was filling in for Deborah Flora, which I will be doing again on Monday and Tuesday. But on Thursday, they had this crap show of a meeting, a work session for the Denver Public Schools Board of Education, where they didn't reach any sort of resolution. They got off track by the Tay 3, Tay Anderson, Scott Esserman, Michelle Quattlebaum, totally off track, and ended up not addressing school safety in a coherent way. I don't even know what next steps they have in place, because it seemed like there were no next steps. And here's a little snippet of an exchange between Tay Anderson and Charmaine Lindsay that could show you some of the tenor of this conversation because of the Tay 3, where they are arguing over school resource officers and a statement by the police chief that if SROs were at East High School, it wouldn't necessarily have made a difference.
It's not my opinion around the assessment around what happened at East High School. Those are the words of the chief of police, who has now said it on numerous occasions that necessarily having an SRO would not have stopped what happened at East High School.
Necessarily.
And those are the chief of police's words.
That's necessarily. That's, we don't know.
I'm just saying those are the chief of police words.
It's still saying we don't know.
Those are his words.
Yeah. And she was addressing those directly and saying, necessarily, we don't know. Open-ended question. And Tay was trying to make an absolute, the chief of police supports my position. You know, Tay only likes the police when he has a direct line to or can quote directly the chief of police in a way that supports him. Remember last year in September, he was pulled over by police for speeding in a school zone outside Manual High School. Vice president of the school board pulled over for speeding. And he was rude and obnoxious to the police officer and said instantly, I don't want to get shot by you, something to that effect. In essence, accusing the police officer, who was entirely respectful, did a great job in that we got the camera footage. It was perfect on the part of the officer. And Tay was absolutely obnoxious. Well, then he made a big deal. Oh, racism, 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 because the officer challenged just, I don't believe that, or something like that. That challenged Tay's presumption that he was going to be shot by him. And Tay made a big deal. Suddenly it was racism, it was insensitive, and he got a direct line. He texted Paul Pazin, the former chief, and this is soon after Ron Thomas became chief of police, and was connected directly with Ron Thomas, who gave him a call, and he was able to get a direct line to the chief of police. He never filed a report or complaint, because there was no basis for it, of course. But he was able to get media attention and a splash and the direct contact with the chief of police. Tay exercises his police privilege when it suits him. Otherwise, he hates the police. And I think internally he does hate the police. It's a massive ideological block that he'll never get beyond. But he also likes exercising that police privilege when he can. 303-696-1971, our telephone number. Let's go to Gary in Denver. You're on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Jimmy. Just wanted to ask for clarification. Don't schools receive a significant amount of funding from property taxes?
Yes. In fact, Kwame said 65%. I'm not sure if it is 65% of their revenue, but that sounds about right. Property taxes are the means through which schools are primarily funded. Yes.
So given what's happened with property taxes, I would expect they're going to see a huge increase in revenue. Isn't that correct?
I would think so. One would think so.
And therefore, the city could probably cut back on the amount of funds they provide to the schools, and the schools probably would still receive a significant increase in revenue. So that's something to think about.
It's entirely plausible. I do think that the specific nature of the marijuana money for after-school programs that are necessary needs to be better spent by the mayor's office, by the city administration. But when it comes to other things going on in the schools, yeah, I mean, I think what we're underscoring here, Gary, is that you need to have much better allocation of the funds in being spent by the school district than we have seen, especially if they get more money from the property tax hikes.
No, I agree. They're going to have a much bigger pie. So getting a new school board in there who might be more financially astute and prioritize things could be a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. Gary, hey, I appreciate the call. 303-696-1971, our telephone number if you want to join in to the festivities. Tom in Aurora. Thank you, Tom, for saying your name and town when you texted in. Denver Public Schools is probably looking at about $60 million for the two lawsuits filed by the two East High School employees. Throw in as well Luis Garcia's father and family. He's the student who was shot and killed outside of the campus at DPS, or at East High School, from two other kids in a car. And his father is suing DPS. And his father, by the way, has argued publicly in a PSAG press conference, that's the Parent Safety Advocacy Group press conference, where he has said there should have been SROs. There needs to be SROs. And he spoke entirely in Spanish. I don't think he knows much or any English. And it was powerful. It was absolutely powerful. And I was impressed to see that. And he's made it very clear. And he and his family have sued DPS over Luis Garcia. So, yeah, a lot of money from these lawsuits because of their rampant failures. And guess what? The board doesn't even get it. At least several members of the board don't. 303-696-1971, our telephone number. Next up, David in Denver. Good morning, David. How's it going?
Good morning. Fine, thanks. How are you, Jimmy?
I'm doing great. So what's on your mind, brother?
Well, I wanted to talk about the college for all mentality, and I think we've broken that back. And the DSST, my daughter's a graduate of DSST, and Bill Kurtz celebrates all types of graduates and all types of post-secondary education programs, and that's fantastic. It allows students to choose their own adventure. As a matter of fact, I'm just headed to the graduation for Independent Electrical Contractors Rocky Mountain this morning. We have 240 graduates who are basically apprentices turning into electricians. And I'd love to have you come out and be our keynote speaker next year.
You know what? I'd be honored to talk with you about that. I'll ask Kelly to talk with you offline, and we'll get your contact information, and we can have a conversation, David. Thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you. Thanks for what you do,
Divi. I appreciate it. I do want to ask you real quick on that college for all mentality. I'm glad that Kwame had brought that point up. I really think that there is a decision-making process that people are making all across the city, all across the state and the country, that says, look, it's not just about going to college. Having these other options can even be more fruitful for your future financially, especially because you don't have to take out as much student loan debt.
Exactly. And, you know, some of the, quite frankly, I want to break a myth. Some of the smartest and quite frankly, richest people I know have a high school diploma and a journeyman electrician's license.
I know. And that's it. It is the trades. The trades are the way to go without having all this debt. David, stay on the line. Kelly will get your contact info so we could talk about that offline. I appreciate the call. One more text before we run to our break here. Jamie from Denver, name in town. Name in town, please, if you wish to text in on the 710KNUS app. In response to another texter who made a comment about children educated in Denver in the 1920s, I just want to say that my parents, who were Denver natives and both attended the Denver public schools and were very well educated, much more so than DPS kids today. You know what? Sad to say, but I believe it. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. It's Denver's local talk leader. News Talk 710 KNUS. Give us a call, 303-696-1971. Come on into the Wolf Den. It's the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. News Talk 710 KNUS. Whether it's Dr. Evil or the left, they haven't been able to kick me off the air. It's the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Grooving back in News Talk 710 KNUS. Little Danielle Nicole and her fabulous voice and bass playing. She's a bass player and is awesome. She used to be in her family's band. It was a family band of her and her brothers, Trampled Underfoot. Yes, named after the Zeppelin tune, Trampled Underfoot. Good to be with you this morning, 710 KNUS. You want to get a real sense for how dysfunctional, how loony, how crazy, how whacked out the Denver School Board is. We're going to shift gears here in just a moment. But first, I want to play this clip of Michelle Quattlebaum, who is one of what I call the Tay Three, Tay Anderson, Scott Esterman, Michelle Quattlebaum, on the Denver Public Schools Board of Education. And in their absolutely Looney Tunes crap show of a meeting on Thursday, one of the most moronic displays of the Denver School Board I have ever seen. And that's saying something. This is emblematic of why. On school resource officers, listen to Michelle Quattlebaum and what she says regarding race and SROs.
We are talking about policing black children. That is what we're talking about. We are talking about, without saying it, we are talking about how do we make sure that white students are safe when they're in school with black students. That's really the conversation that we're having. But we're trying not to have it. And I'm tired of it. Let's have it. We're going to have a conversation. Let us have the conversation. Let us not lie to ourselves about what we're really talking about.
Did you hear that? How do we make sure that white students are safe while they're in school with black students? She says, and she is a black woman, Quattlebaum says that's what SROs are about. It's not about school safety. It's about safety for white kids being with black kids. Seriously? About policing black children. That's the mindset that some of these board members have. And that's what the debate is about to her. Let's be clear about the real issue. It's about policing black children. No, it's not. It's about protecting children, black, brown, white, green, purple, whatever their color, whatever their ethnic or religious background, keeping them all safe. But that's where Quattlebaum is coming from, an ideological block that is just so deep and accusatory. She can't even have a real discussion about school safety because she wants to make it about race, just like Tay Anderson wants to make everything about race. And it is nonsensical and ludicrous. Let's go to Scott Esterman clip from a press conference on Wednesday where Scott Esserman, one of the Take Three, was ranting in regards to SROs and oppressive systems.
We have reached out to community. We have heard from community. We receive emails from community that are extensive. They may not be the loudest voices you're hearing. They may not be organizing press conferences on a weekly basis, but they are telling us loudly and clearly that having SROs in the building is, in fact, an oppressive system.
Having SROs in the building is, in fact, an oppressive system. That's Scott Esserman's mindset, too. Absolutely. I mean, listener text. That's disgusting. Going back to Michelle Quattlebaum, and absolutely, it is. It is. And those three are so far gone. And that's why the meeting was derailed on Thursday. Dysfunction is as dysfunction does. Tay Anderson has got to go. Make no mistake about it. There are no two ways about it. Now, I want to go to something absolutely fascinating. And I, your resident millennial who is consistently on this station, I'm going to talk a little bit about something fascinating that was actually in the New York Times. Millennials are not an exception. They've moved to the right. That is the headline in the New York Times from their senior political analyst, Nate Cohn. Millennials are not an exception. They've moved to the right. Subhead, over the last decade, almost every cohort of voters under 50 has shifted rightward. Let's break this down. What does it say? 15 years ago, a new generation of young voters propelled Barack Obama to a decisive victory that augured a new era of Democratic dominance. Let me say something, because I was a freshman in college in 2008, in that fall. And it's also when I started doing radio. I was a campus radio host, KRCX 93.9, The Real Deal at Regis University. And I was doing a weekly show. Actually, at that point, for a semester, I did two shows, one 2 hours and one 1 hour. Conservative political talk on a college campus, and it was Obama mania. Bernie ain't got nothing on Obama mania and the enthusiasm for Barack Obama from the young generation that was in college at the time. I mean, it was extraordinarily strong. I was an outlier, and it was fascinating, fascinating to be doing what I did in campus media then. So I could vouch for that statement. Well, the article continues from the New York Times. 15 years later, those once young voters aren't so young and aren't quite so Democratic. In the 2020 presidential election, voters who were 18 to 29 in 2008, including me, well, actually, this statement does not include me. I voted McCain Palin, first election ever. Those voters in 2008 backed Joe Biden this year, or in 2020, by 55% to 43%. According to our estimates, a margin roughly half that of Mr. Obama's 12 years earlier. So notice that difference. Roughly half of voters who voted for Obama, who are millennials, at least from 18 to 29, voted for Biden in 2020. The exit polls show it even closer, with Mr. Biden winning by just 51 to 45 among voters who were 18 to 27 in 2008. Exit poll reports report results among those 30 to 39, not 30 to 41, the group that was 18 to 29 in 2008. So bottom line is a big shift there. And last fall, the young voters of 08, by then 32 to 43, preferred Democratic congressional candidates by just 10 points in the Times Siena polling. New York Times, Siena University, my father's alma mater. So that's on congressional. So it wasn't just presidential with Biden. The New York Times continues. This shift toward the right among the young voters who propelled Mr. Obama to victory 15 years ago is part of a larger pattern. Over the last decade, almost every cohort of voters under 50 has shifted toward the right, based on an analysis of thousands of survey interviews archived at the Roper Center. Now, the article goes on to talk about how this isn't a stunning finding, because you have that traditional idea that as you get older, you become more conservative. But there has been this idea, millennials, trust me, I have heard it my entire adult life, including from listeners in this station. Millennials, broadly speaking, are socialists, they're far left, they're irreparable, they're not going to be conservative, they're naturally left-wing, they're this and that and this and that and this and that on the left. And there have been reports that have bolstered this, that have argued that millennials and Gen Z are the exception to the rule about as you get older, you get more conservative. Well, guess what? This data, among other data points, proves that is not the case. Millennials are not the exception. They are not immune to this tendency to become more conservative. And you know what? I'm not surprised. Because I talked even several years ago about how millennials are a naturally conservative constituency. A lot of folks didn't believe me because they looked at the likes of AOC, who's only a couple years older than me, I think, who, you know, in her mid-30s, but earlier when she was elected, she was 29. It was, oh, this is the representation of all millennials. And I said, no, it isn't. Although they will vote on personality quite a bit. Does this candidate, like an AOC, relate to them on a personal level? But millennials are extraordinarily independent in their mindset. They don't want to be told what to do. They don't want to be told how to act. And they have so many choices. The millennial generation was the first generation to come up with a vast, vast, vast amount of choices. I mean, think about what we've had because of the digital space. And millennials were growing up in that. And our owners of major companies, Mark Zuckerberg is one, is a millennial. Major companies that offer so many different kinds of choices and things. And you have had no, we've never had more choices on everything than we do today. And millennials value choice. They value that kind of thing, which can only come from the free market and can only come from the ability to make your own decisions when you have all these choices. And that's what millennials are looking at. That's what millennials want. And that is a naturally conservative thing, right? Free markets that give you the opportunity to make decisions for yourself and your family. Conservative mindset. A mindset that millennials have entrenched in them. So to me, this is the least surprising thing, because number one, as you get older, you become more conservative. It's a truism, and it will continue to be a truism for many, 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 many years. And because millennials are naturally more conservative than they have realized going back years. But a lot of these social fads and so forth have really gotten into their mindset that made them more democratic. Well, this is some data showing millennials are moving rightward. And guess what? It shouldn't be surprising. Might be, but it shouldn't be surprising. 303-696-1971 is our telephone number if you want to join into the festivities. We'll take a break. Final segment coming up here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. Don't go anywhere. It's News Talk 710 KNUS. Seriously, folks, it's quite literally the best damn bumper music known to man. Nearly 10 years running on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. News Talk 710 KNUS. Joe Bonamassa bringing us back, singing about the Bill and the Blues. Now, he's talking about his woman. He's not talking about the national debt and the federal government, but he could be, which is why I chose this bumper this morning from the great Joe Bonamassa, who's coming to Red Rocks on August 6th, and maybe on a radio show you listen to frequently, I hope. We shall see. But the national debt is nearly $32 trillion with a T. With a big capital T, $32 trillion, just about. And, of course, you had the debt ceiling debacle this week and the deal that was reached. Ken Buck voting no. Lauren Boebert not voting. I'm not sure what that was about. But she had stated her opposition to the debt ceiling. And you know what? They both had great reasons as far as fiscal responsibility. Ken Buck had a humorous meme where he shared the Trojan horse of Greek history and showing the Trojan horse, and McCarthy was welcoming it into the city. Strong language. He minced no words. He called it a surrender. Fair enough. And certainly it wasn't nearly what we would have liked to see. And I gave in my column for Colorado Politics on Wednesday, I gave credit to Buck and Boebert for their position on that vote or that opposition. But I also gave credit to Kevin McCarthy, not because he got what we would have wanted per se, but he did get some notable wins on work requirements for food stamps. On student loans, by the way, the Senate also passed a resolution. I may talk about this Monday when I fill in for Deborah Flora. Again, I'll be filling in for Deborah on Monday and Tuesday. Tune in then. And they voted in the Senate against Biden's debt ceiling or against Biden's student loan forgiveness scheme. Great news. It's a big deal. The Democratic Senate passed it. And there are other things. So that wasn't in the debt ceiling deal, but it's being done separately and it will be put on Biden's desk and he's promised to veto it. But there were several wins from McCarthy, which was, you know, fair enough. It's why a guy like Jim Jordan voted yes on the debt ceiling deal. Not a fake conservative, Jim Jordan. So it's a little bit more complicated sometimes as far as their mindset here and what they're voting on in that case. But let's go to Bert in Aurora. Good morning, Bert. You're on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, my friend. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, I have a question. We keep hearing the comparison between how the government budgets and personal finance on our own. And my question to you is, if I go out and borrow money to buy a house, the house is collateral. If I don't make my car payment and I go into default, they take the car. We don't hear anything about what collateral we have put up for our national debt. What if we went into default?
So I think I wouldn't really be too worried about default. I think that the world has a confidence in the United States from the full faith and credit and the strength of our economy and the wherewithal of our people. Like, it's not actual collateral, but it is a thing that has given investors sufficient confidence, that has given the world sufficient confidence. And quite frankly, I think it would be just fine if we defaulted for a few days before getting a great debt ceiling deal. I think what we got was fine. Whether I would have voted on it is a different voted for it is a different question, but I understand some of the confines of the deal. But I think it's a little different when you're talking at that level from a collateral standpoint. Although, Bert, it's an interesting comparison.
All right. Well, you survived the rain for today.
Thank you. You as well. Appreciate the call. 303-696-1971. Again, I don't like the debt ceiling deal, but we got some worthy wins. That's all I'm saying. I could see why Republicans would have voted for it. I think Ken Buck, who I'm hoping, we've been trying to get him scheduled. I'm hoping I'll have him Monday or Tuesday on Deborah's show. I know he'll be speaking at the Western Conservative Summit next weekend, though. And, of course, that's coming up the 9th and 10th next Friday and Saturday. I will be broadcasting live for my show. So come early on Saturday. Come over to the KNUS tent. Say hi. I want to talk to you. And I'll be introducing Larry Elder that morning as well. But what have we got coming up here with the Western Conservative Summit presented by 710 KNUS and the Centennial Institute? Again, Friday, June 9th and 10th, featuring Lauren Boebert, Aaron Metaxas, Ken Buck, Riley Gaines, Frank Gaffney, Tulsi Gabbard, Larry Elder, Missouri Senator Josh Hawley. The list goes on. And you may not be on stage, but you should be there. Newstalk 710 KNUS is the official station of the 2023 Western Conservative Summit. Get your tickets online at 710KNUS.com. Richard, the limo driver, texting in, Jimmy, period. Joe Bonamassa is a slam dunk on bumper music any time of day or night. Well, I couldn't agree more. And certainly appreciate that. Jacqueline from Sydney, Nebraska. Thank you again for name in town when you text in. I haven't heard much about Joe Biden's visit to the Air Force Academy and the tumble he took. He's doing fine. He called it getting sandbagged the other day. He played it off. It's a serious issue. He's fine. Well, we got to keep that in mind when we're talking an 80-year-old president. He should not be running for re-election. Period. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger. Tune in Monday and Tuesday, 3 p.m., when I'm in for Deborah, and I'll see you next Saturday at the Western Conservative Summit. May God bless America.
30 seconds until 9 o'clock. I'm 30 seconds early. I think I'll just be silent. What do you think about that? Hey, it's John Caldera in for my friend Peter Boyles. Taking a well-deserved day off. You got me for 3 whole hours. Not to worry. We're going to get through this one. Why? I'm not really even up yet. I sleep in on Saturday. No. I'm thrilled to be with you. Give me a call, 303-696.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.